Some critics of the U.S. media believe that much of the reporting about the presidential campaign is sadly lacking. Rick Perlstein is one of those critics. He's a journalist and a historian of the post-1960s American conservative movement and the author of several books, including Reaganland. He spoke with KGVM contributor David Rosenberg.
In terms of the way the media is covering the election, Trump and Biden, you think that there's something wrong with that, that somehow they're not really telling the truth about Trump? Is that it? I mean, it seems like they are, in a certain sense. They're saying he's claiming the election was a fraud, but there's no evidence. They will say that, and they will talk about how he contributed to the January 6th insurrection. But what's your take on how they're covering the Trump-Biden race?
Yeah, my interpretation would be a little bit more complicated than that. I think most of the information you need in order to understand, you know, how terrifying Donald Trump is, you know, kind of somewhere in your newspaper, you know. But the problem is not really that the information isn't getting out there. The problem is that political journalism in America these days, for a long time, follows these very rigid genre conventions, right? There's an overarching narrative. And our politics, you know, over the last, let's say, 7 years since Donald Trump became president, or, you know, 8.5 years since he started running for president, has passed the kind of watershed in a way that, you know, makes it completely different from, you know, politics, say, 30 years ago. You saw all the signs, you know, pointing in this direction, right? But the idea that we have this kind of horse race between two roughly equal formations, it reminds me of kind of like trying to sell the story that way is like trying to pedal a bicycle of it where the chain is off the gears, right? It just doesn't, nothing matches up anymore. So the problem is the narratives that they use, the tropes they use, the metaphors they use, the intellectual cognitive frames they use, you know, are exactly the same as the ones they would have used in 1996. And that's just a terrible derogation of their duty to just give people an accurate picture of reality. And, you know, there's great work being done. I think there's been especially good work done on, you know, the 2025 project that they have in mind, the Republicans have in mind for kind of stripping the federal government bare for parts and selling it to the highest bidder. There's been good reporting at this late date, you know, and a lot of this is about the good stuff is belated, right? I mean, they should have been doing it 8 years ago, right? I mean, if you know, were following Donald Trump and, you know, say, watched a documentary about him that came out in the early 90s called Donald Trump, What's the Deal? You knew exactly what he was. But, you know, I'm talking about media coverage when he was president saying, oh, he's just going to become a normal Republican president as soon as he grows into the role and that sort of thing. Those are the sort of tropes I'm talking about. And, you know, I spend a lot of time thinking about what this will look like to, you know, historians 75 years from now. And, you know, the smart ones will kind of dig in and see how terrifying and dangerous Donald Trump truly was. And then they'll look at the media coverage and they'll say, these things do not match up, right? And that's the horror I'm talking about. You know, that's
but
the kind
isn't
of
that true? I mean, if you
it's
look
true
back,
a lot of things, yes.
Yeah, I mean, if you look back, say, at the Bush administration, you know, mm-hmm. it was a group that led the country into a war that never needed to happen. Of course, you could say that about most U.S. wars, or maybe yeah. all. And then Obama takes office and he and Pelosi don't want to do anything about the fact that the country right. was lied into a war. And, you know, you go back to
this
the Johnson administration, you know.
Yes. So I'm doing this column called The Infernal Triangle for the American Prospect. And you can just go to prospect.org and sign up to get it every Wednesday. And it's based on a book I'm writing called The Infernal Triangle. You know, and the triangle I'm referring to is, you know, Republican authoritarianism, like just like you say, Democrat inadequacy in the face of that authoritarianism and media incompetence. And the book itself, you know, starts the story in 2000. You know, I could have started it in 1980 or even 1960, right? These are all trends, right? But the trends have reached their apotheosis. And the greater the civic emergency, the more tragic it is. But it's absolutely true. You know, I went over you know, very carefully, you know, what the media did in the face of Donald Trump's, I mean, not Donald Trump, George W. Bush's, you know, transparent lies. You know, I mean, if you listen to KPFA, you probably had people on who were experts on how weapons of mass destruction worked, who said it's impossible that Saddam Hussein is weapons of mass destruction. And yet every day in the editorials of the New York Times and the Washington Post, it was taken as a given. So this is hardly something new, but it's a question of degree, right? Now that we have someone who literally says the laws don't apply to him, right? We have millions of Americans for whom the very institutions of the justice system are completely illegitimate because they're taking on this leader of their cult of personality. I think we would all agree that America is facing a civic emergency that we saw signs of in the past, in past decades, which has reached a pitch that literally places democracy in jeopardy. And you can hear echoes of that faintly in some of our strong mainstream institutions of journalism, but way too late and way too little.
So do you think part of the problem is the people that Trump brings with him, the Proud Boys, the Oath Keepers, what you might call modern stormtroopers, the extremists of all kinds, and maybe there's even too much emphasis on who he is and just the fact that he would, or he has opened the gates for all these extreme elements to come out of the woodwork? Is that really part of the problem?
I think a really good account of how all this happened would have to include, yes, all the stormtroopers that he's let in the gates. And, you know, I did a piece in These Times about how American mainstream journalism covering politics has consistently and systematically, you know, downplayed the violent elements in the Republican coalition, going all the way back to, you know, the first years of the 21st century, right? So you can find that. But you
well,
also
right. have there were thugs like, down in Florida trying to intimidate Democrats from doing something about the election.
Right. So what we're talking about is basically the Republican Party at this point is a political formulation that has a parliamentary wing and a paramilitary wing. But you have to look also at the parliamentary wing. The fact that someone like Mitch McConnell, starting in the Obama presidency, completely turned the Senate into an even more minoritarian institution than it ever was, routinized the filibuster as a way to turn this, you know, tiny plutocratic elite into the governors of the society. You have to look at something like the Supreme Court, in which suddenly these nine people, six of which are reactionaries, have somehow become the sovereigns who decide the laws of the United States. You know, you have to look at the rise of a Republican coalition that made weaponizing, you know, hatred and racism the basis of their electoral appeal. You have to look at a narrative about Democratic election fraud that literally goes back to the 1960s and the 1960 presidential election. So this is all a very complicated situation, but our journalism doesn't do complicated very well. It's gotten worse and worse and worse. And then you have to bring in, you know, the hollowing out of the journalism business. Journalism, by the way, by the people who founded the country, wasn't even really supposed to be a business. You know, the first law, one of the first laws that Congress passed under the new Constitution in the 1780s, right, was that they made postage almost free for newspapers because they considered the idea that, you know, newspapers should stand or fall on the normal business concerns ridiculous. I mean, they basically socialized the news media. And now we have really
magnificent. Although in those days, it was openly partisan, the news.
It was openly partisan, right? And you can also look at, I do this in both my column and my book, the rise of this kind of professionalized journalism discourse in which every problem has to be treated as the equal responsibility of the Republicans and the Democrats, right? And, you know, we have this Democratic Party where the, you know, the biggest flaw, the biggest, you know, kind of derogation of their duty is acting like Boy Scouts when they should act like, you know, warriors fighting against fascism. And then you have another side that has made lying and cheating and stealing and deception the basis of their appeal. And these two sides are treated as if they were equal. And the way I pointed out is this is done in the name of fighting bias, in the name of so-called objectivity. But if you treat the side that's willing to lie, cheat, steal, and you know, instigate violence as equivalent to the side that acts like Boy Scouts, you're biased. You're biased in the on the side of the side that's willing to lie, cheat, and steal, because you know you're giving them a pass, right? I mean, if you are you know, in a boxing match, right, and one of the guys, you know, is doing kidney punches and crotch punches, and he gets called for just as many fouls as the guy who's, you know, following the rules, you would say that the referee is biased, you know, towards the guy who's cheating, right? We have a biased media. They're biased towards the side that lies, cheats, and steals. They're biased towards the Republicans.
And yet, the right wing will say the lamestream media, as some of them say, is biased against them, and that they're
right. And that's you know, that's the Steve Bannon, you know, kind of model. I mean, which is, you know, he named it, but of course he didn't invent it. It's been going back a long way. Richard Nixon was the master of this, of basically trashing the institutions of journalism itself, you know, much as Vladimir Putin does, is, you know, everyone's cheating like I do, everyone lies like I do, and the journalists are just as bad. And anything you don't agree with suddenly becomes fake news, right? So by turning the media in people's minds into just the kind of cesspool that the Republican Party is, it becomes impossible for journalists to get much footing, even when they do their jobs well.
What is the solution? How does one counter that? I mean, the alternative media does, but that
yes,
kind of still on the margins of society. So how does one break through that?
Well, I mean, I think people at this late date have to be, you know, just even normie people, not the KPFA types, have to be much more open to alternative sources of information, right? We have to be much more critical. I mean, the way we kind of counter this is by, you know, basically becoming much more political, much more politicized. You know, I'm also a historian of the right. And if you ask me, you know, in this series of four books I've written that cover the history of the right from the 50s to the 80s, what is their greatest accomplishment? Why have they succeeded so much when they have so little to offer the American people? It would be that everyone who has any kind of conservative inclination or temperament in the society, whether they're military types or police types or orthodox religious believers, were taught how to be political, right? They were organized into various sorts of political machines, right? Preachers weren't involved in politics until the 1970s. And then people like Jerry Falwell taught them to think of themselves like precinct captains. That's how social workers need to start thinking about themselves. That's how, you know, journalists need to start thinking about themselves. You know, that's how scientists need to start thinking about themselves. Anyone who believes in the basic values of the liberal enlightenment, just basic ideas that human beings are here on earth in order to realize their own potential and not kind of fall into some sort of tribal hierarchy, has to, first of all, vote and make sure everyone they know who agrees with them votes, but also, you know, begin sort of infiltrating the organs of the Democratic Party, just like the right wing of the Republican Party. The right wing took over the Republican Party because, you know, the people running the Republican Party, people running the Democratic Party, I should say, you know, are just not equal to this historical movement.
Well, you saw that with the Sanders campaign, people trying to influence the platform.
And the Howard Dean campaign before that, right? I mean, yeah. Howard Dean was destroyed by the Democratic establishment that was trying to save face because they didn't want someone out there every day pointing out, you know, their own mistakes in going along with the Democratic, going along with the Iraq war, right? So, you know, this is a real struggle and it's a generational struggle. And if we survive, you know, this election, we have a project of, you know, democratic reconstruction that has to go down in history as something very profound and great if we're to save this country from the worst possible impulses that have always been there, right? Have always been there as potentials, but are reaching their apotheosis in a way we haven't seen since something like the 1860s.
I think for a lot of progressives, you know, when they look at Trump, of course, they would agree with what you're saying, and yet they look at someone like Biden and they look at the war in Gaza and all the U.S. interventions around the world, and they think, why the hell would I vote for this guy? You know,
Right. And the
or his
reason you would
position
vote for
on
this guy
immigration.
is because there's a reason to vote for this guy because I can very easily see a President Donald Trump telling Benjamin Netanyahu to feel free to use a nuclear weapon against Gaza. Right. So, you know, there's
He
only two
was
people on the
kind
ballot.
of pissed off at Netanyahu because Netanyahu didn't express appreciation for him. Or he actually, he said at one point, he said, you know, I thought I would get along with him better than Mahmoud Abbas, but he said it was the opposite. He says he kind of thought Netanyahu was an a-hole, which is.
Well, you know, by the time if Trump becomes president, Netanyahu will probably be gone and Benny Gantz will probably be in there. And Benny Gantz is kind of seen as the more moderate guy in Israel. But on Gaza, he thinks they should use more force rather than less. So, you know, whatever, you know, Donald Trump's personal feelings about Netanyahu and whether Netanyahu kind of paid the proper obeisance to him, you know, that question may be moot. But going back to your point, right? Yes, Joe Biden is in many ways an unattractive candidate, an unattractive politician, but, you know, he's also, you know, a competent politician who's administering the government competently. People forget that when you vote, you're voting to hire a manager, you know, you're voting to, you know, you're voting to hire someone who does the hiring and firing and making sure, you know, that the kind of tasks that need to be done in order to have a humane society get done. And, you know, the fact is, you know, our unemployment rate is the lowest it has been in 50 years. You know, I do not in any way, shape or form, you know, gainsay the people, especially Arab Americans and Palestinians, who, you know, cannot in good conscience vote for Joe Biden, right? I support the uncommitted movement. But all the same, if Donald Trump becomes president instead of Joe Biden, they'll be lined up against the wall like all the rest of us, you know, when the stormtroopers finally take over. So, you know, you can think that Biden is a neo-imperialist. He probably is. But, you know, this is one situation where taking a half loaf instead of a full loaf may be the margin between a society living and a society dying.
So we could be looking at a Handmaid's Tale kind of situation if he wins.
Absolutely. A Handmaid's Tale kind of situation, you know, choose your dystopian, narrative of choice. And don't forget that the president of the United States has plenipotentiary sole power to decide whether we, you know, push a button and, you know, end all life on Earth. So, you know, do you want this crazy guy with brain worms doing that? I don't think
so.
Well,
he seems to think that war interrupts business, so maybe he wouldn't do that.
Well, he would like to interrupt business right now because, you know, he has no viable business,
yeah.
Right? And he owes, you know, $500 million to the state. So, you know, any kind of distraction, and he's, you know, basically going to owe his presidency to whoever is willing to, you know, put up his hundred millions of dollars. And I'm sure those aren't going to be, you know, anything good for people like you and me. We call it the poly crisis. Every day adds a new one.
That's journalist and historian Rick Perlstein speaking with KGVM contributor David Rosenberg. This interview was released on April 15th, 2024.